This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited 2x miles on every purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
It's All Songs Considered from NPR Music. I'm Robin Hilton. Earlier this year, singer Paul Simon surprised fans by releasing seven psalms, his first new album since 2018.
Good morning, Mr. Indignation. Looks like you haven't slept all night. In my professional opinion, go back to bed, turn off your light.
The release of Seven Psalms was surprising not because so much time has passed, but because Paul Simon's previous record, In the Blue Light, was supposed to be his last. In a conversation with All Songs Considered's Bob Boylan, Simon said he was ready to retire from music and pursue other creative projects, like painting. But at 81 years old, Simon couldn't stay away from making music for long. His latest album is a probing, deeply personal, and considered work about the state of the world, war, global warming, the pandemic, and so much more. This week on All Songs Considered, we go back to our 2018 conversation with Paul Simon when he first announced that he was done making new music. Here he is talking about the creative process that led to his previous album, In the Blue Light, a collection of reworked and re-recorded older songs from his catalog.
Well, I haven't written a new song in a couple of years now. I think after Stranger to Stranger, a funny thing happened when I finished. I really felt like a switch. I literally felt like a switch clicked, and I said, I'm finished. I think I'm finished. And so I haven't written anything new, although I was fooling around, or have been fooling around with a little guitar piece, but...
You said to me, actually, back then, if I remember right, when we last talked, that you wondered what would happen if instead, when you have these creative impulses, because you've been writing songs since you were 13, because that was what your 13-year-old self wanted to do. If you turn that off, if you, like, stop doing that, like, what would happen? And that's what you were wondering a couple of years ago. Now you're saying that it's been a few years, and basically, other than a little guitar thing, you haven't written songs. So... where are you finding those creative impulses going?
Well, I'm not up to that, as it turns out, about the creative impulses. What I'm really interested in on a personal level are my dreams. I have a long history, really going back to like when I'm four, of violence dreams. And... those dreams, they got so intense a few years ago that I took a trip down to Brazil to see this healer, John of God. I didn't know that he necessarily would be what I needed, but there were friends of mine who said, go down, you'll find it interesting. Anyway, to me, it's like, I don't need much arm twisting to go to Brazil. So I said, okay, I'll go down there and see what's going on here. Well, he didn't really have anything that fixed it, if that's the right word. But I've been thinking about it more and more. And lately, in the last year or so, my dreams are getting longer and more, explosions of anger sometimes come out, but sometimes I feel like I can almost control the dreams and I have an insight into what it is. And so I feel like this is a long story and I'm beginning to understand things about my life and who I am. And I feel like that's what I'm up to doing, rather than thinking, how can I develop music or some other creative form? I've begun to think that music was a vehicle that brought me all this way, these many years, And the purpose of it was, aside from giving me intense enjoyment, the purpose of it was to put me here so that I could begin to understand just what my life was about and what it meant. And so I guess that's mostly what's on my mind on a personal level. On a occupational level, I've gotten involved with Edward Wilson's Half Earth Foundation, which deals with ecological problems and ways of preserving life on the planet and dealing with climate change.
And you were doing the Children's Health Fund. You still involved
in
that as well?
To a lesser degree. I've turned more of my attention to environmental issues. I see that as problem solving that's really necessary. I look at all the anger and the conflicts that go on within our species, human rights, racism and xenophobia and sexism and all of these human rights. And I think, well, there's a battle that's coming between the good and the, I don't know if evil is the right word or mistaken is the right word, but there's a spiritual battle that is forming now. And the result of it, as far as humans and our species goes, I know which side I'm on, but if there's no planet and if there's no life on the planet or life on the planet is so severely diminished, then all of these battles are moot. It doesn't matter. So that's why I think, no, I'd rather work and try and reverse bad political decisions or help buy as much land as possible and preserve it. And this is for my children's future. I'm not going to see it, but that's something that I think of. And I think, well, I can certainly use my music to raise money or awareness for that. So that will keep me playing. I really enjoy playing. But I haven't addressed the issue of what other forms of my natural inclination to create. I really haven't come up to that since we had that discussion. I imagine that it's coming. But I really haven't been there. And then I've been paying attention a lot to this final tour. So, you know, I really do take it one step at a time to make it as interesting and as musical as I can. I mean, in a way, it's procrastinating if my job were to create something new. I haven't really created anything new, although I've recreated in a way that I'm pleased with. I like it. I don't feel like I was just doing a retread with this album. I was rethinking all of it, and even rewriting where I thought the songs needed to be.
Can I start by playing something that you work with a group, Y Music, the letter Y and the word music there.
Right.
It's three string players and what is flute and... you could tell me, but...
Flute, trumpet, and clarinet.
And you do a version of Can't Run, Bud. And I was thinking about your work with the environment and your concern about it, which is the song sort of starts off taking place in Ukraine. Chernobyl is certainly the image in my mind when this song plays. Can we talk about the way mm-hmm. this song was rearranged? And I think it's an exciting remaking. I'm going to play a little.
Can't run, but I can walk much faster than this. Can't run, but I can't run, but I can walk much faster than this. Can't run, but a cooling system burns out in the Ukraine. Trees and umbrellas protect us from the new rain. Armies of engineers to analyze the soil. the food we contemplate, the water that we boil. I can't run, but I can walk much faster than this. Can't run, but I can't run, but I can walk much faster than this.
I think it was Bryce Dessner. Our audience knows Bryce from The National,
right,
who helped do the arrangements. But the this isn't that far from the original arrangements, who I don't remember Antonia's last name, who did that, the Brazilian musician.
Guimarães?
Yes.
From Wok T. Yes, he, Bryce took that as the model. Can you play the little musical interlude that Y Music plays that Bryce wrote for them? That's sort of original. You know the part I mean? It's sort of very, very rapid.
Is this it?
Yeah. Right.
That's exciting. How's that going on?
Yes. Those, you know, enormous applause and for that group. They're an exceptional group of musicians, and the music that they play as a group is neoclassical music by mostly young composers. What's interesting is to take those composers and have these songs arranged by them through Y Music. Over a year ago, I did a festival in Eau Claire, Wisconsin,
for Justin with Justin.
Yeah,
Vernon.
For Justin. That's right. And we did about Y Music and I. We did about 10 songs together. So we'd been fooling around for a year or so with how to do this. So in a way, those songs I could choose as a beginning to this album. And then Bill Frisell and I are friends for a while. Yeah. And I love any opportunity to play with him.
Gosh.
So, you know, I would say to him, what song would you, you know, here's like five or six choices. Which would you like to do? And then we did that. We did his choices. The pianist Sullivan Fortner, who I think is an extraordinary pianist.
Oh, my gosh. And they're them together on Questions for the Angels.
If you shop for love in a bargain store and you don't get what you bargain for, can you get your money back? If an empty train in a railroad station calls its final destination, can you choose another track? Will I wake up from these violent dreams with my hair as white as the morning moon? Questions for the angels. Who believes in angels?
His name, Sullivan Fortner, came up through Jamie Haddad, who's the percussionist in my band. He said, you have to hear this guy play. And so we got together, Sullivan and I, and we picked a song, Some Folks' Lives. And he wrote that piano arrangement, which is really beautiful. I love it. It's one of my favorites on the album.
Some folks' lives roll easy as a breeze, drifting through the summer night, heading for a sunny day.
And Wynton Marsalis, who's a real dear friend of mine, a few years ago, Wynton said to me, I really like that song of yours, Pig, Sheep, and Wolves. Oh, well, I mean, almost nobody's seemed to have known that song. That was one of my favorite songs from the You're the One album.
I'll play a little of this because such a beautiful feel.
Big and fat. Pig's supposed to look like that. Barnyard thug. He makes his bed in a puddle of mud. Look at him walking down the street. That's a half ton of pig meat. Up in the hills, above the farm, lives a pack of wolves. Never did no harm. They sleep all day, hunt till fall. Maybe catch a couple of rodents, you know, carnivore. Sheep in the meadow, nibbling on some clover. One of those sheep wanders over. Sits by a rock, separated from the flock. He's just sitting by a rock. Where'd he go? I don't know. Yeah, he was here a minute ago. Yeah, but I don't know.
Sheep is dead, got a gash as big as a wolf's head.
Big and fat, how pig's supposed to look like that?
And of course, the what I'll say perhaps is the innocent wolf gets blamed for a crime.
Right, it's, yeah. it's you know, what do you call it? Profiling.
Yeah, right.
That's what the song's about. But there was, you know, there's an opportunity for Wynton to write something for me in that. So, you know, I love that because I love to hang out with Wynton. Sort of that's the way the song came together. The Teacher is a very interesting version. These two guitarists, the Assad brothers, and they worked out the arrangement. What was so, you know, lovely for me was I could give the song to these musicians whose work I really respected and say, here, you make up the arrangement and I'll figure out how to sing over it.
So without any sort of, you gave them the old version?
I'd say, yeah, here's the song. Don't take the old version. I don't want you to copy the old version right. And do it again.
Yeah.
Do it any way you want that feels right and fun for you to play. And then I'll figure out how to sing it again. That gave me, you know, a chance to stretch out vocally and, uh-huh. you know, rephrase things and, you know, learn from what these guys were playing. So that was fun for me. They're really all extraordinary players. So again, the songs that I chose and the players, it was partly from the players and partly would be, my son Adrian said, you have to do a one-man ceiling, which I've been doing live, and you have to do some folks' lives. And Edie said, you should do How the Heart Approaches What It Yearns. And I wanted to do The Teacher, because I loved that song, and I thought that I needed to rewrite the last verse in order for that song to be right.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll play The Teacher. I'm talking with Paul Simon, and you're listening to All Songs Considered from NPR Music.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Alienware. Upgrade your gaming tech now during Alienware's summer sale event and save on select next-gen gaming tech like the Alienware M18 laptop powered by an Intel Core i9 processor. Visit Alienware.com/deals. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Lagunitas Brewing Company. Since 1993, Lagunitas has been challenging the status quo, brewing innovative beer, and crafting stories along the way. Featuring a wide range of craft brews, cult classics, and non-alcoholic options, there's a seat at the bar for everyone. Bring the dog, too. Lagunitas Brewing Company. Because every great song deserves a great beer. It's good to have friends. Learn more at Lagunitas.com. This message comes from NPR sponsor Warby Parker. Their glasses start at $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. Go to warbyparker.com/covered.
I'm Rachel Martin. After hosting Morning Edition for years, I know that the news can wear you down. So we made a new podcast called Wild Card, where a special deck of cards and a whole bunch of fascinating guests help us sort out what makes life meaningful. It's part game show, part existential deep dive, and it is seriously fun. Join me on Wild Card, wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
Let me play just a little of this. Should I go to toward the last verse here?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so tell me when I'm close here.
The remnants of charge. Yeah, right before that.
Okay, let me just go back.
It's cold. All that remains of the followers' fate are the remnants of charred photographs. The teacher is buried under rubble of stone. And the wind reads his words and it laughs. Deeper and deeper, the dreamer of love sleeps on a quilt of stars.
Remind folks who don't know the teacher, what shifted in this song? I could play the old version, but let's just talk about it for a minute.
Well, first of all, it's in a very unusual time signature for us. It's in 11:08. It's sort of a North African time signature. The original recording is a really interesting recording, but the story... I didn't make my point clear. My point was, don't follow gurus and teachers who tell you must follow me and, you know, otherwise dire consequences will occur. You know, watch out for people like that. Mm-hmm. And in the first recording that I did, I didn't make that clear in the last verse. I sort of expressed it in a way that was ironic, so the listener would have to infer that that was what I was saying. But this time I went and I made it as clear as I could that the teacher was killed and everything that he said was, the wind reads his words and it laughs. I thought I was improving the song by making the point clear. And the two guitars... The Assad brothers, they played 11 in a different division of the 11 beats, which made me phrase a little bit differently. And then I put a jazz saxophonist, a really great player, Walter Blanding. He's a friend of Winton's, and he plays with the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra.
Mm-hmm. Who did a concert of your music, didn't they?
We did an evening together at Lincoln Center a few years ago, yeah. So... that's how the song came about. Darling Lorraine, which I think is one of the best songs that I've ever written. Sure. The first time that I did it, the arrangement was so kind of interesting and eclectic that I thought you couldn't follow the storyline because you were distracted by the sounds. So this time I came and was very careful to... try and allow for the storyline to go right through, because if you don't follow the storyline, then the ending doesn't have its power. And it's also touching for me that this was the last time that Vincent Nghini, who was my friend and bandmate for 30 years, this was the last recording that he made because he passed away last December.
The first time I saw her, I couldn't be sure. But the sin of impatience said she's just what you're looking for. So I walk right up to her and with the part of me that talks, I introduce myself as Frank from New York, New York, New York. She's so hot, she's so cool, I'm not, I'm just a fool in love with darling Lorraine. All my life I've been a wanderer. Not really. I've rented a room in my parents' place. Anyway, so anyway, Lorraine and I got married, and the usual marriage stuff. And then one day she says to me, from out of the blue, she says, Frank, I've had enough. Romance is a heartbreaker, and I'm not meant to be a homemaker, and I'm tired of being darling Lorraine. What? You don't love me anymore? What? You're walking out the door? What? You don't like the way I chew? Well, hey, let me tell you, you're not the
one. So it's, I'm glad to have a really good recording of that song. It's a long song, and I didn't get it right the first time, and the first time was on You're the One in the year 2000.
There are three songs from that record, it feels like. Maybe. You're the One. It's a tough year for
You're the One is a really good and underrated album. A lot of songs come from that. I mean, there are actually more songs from that album recorded that I didn't put on this particular record that I have as extra tracks. That was a breakthrough album for me in terms of writing.
How so? If as a follower of your music, I mean, I'm always surprised. But what would...
I don't know. Let's see. You know, the sounds, lyrics. It was like after a period of time that I was, I'd been several years where I was drinking ayahuasca, and you know, the visions from that. And then I stopped that. That's when I stopped in 2000. So there's a lot of that in there. And
did your healing that you talked about just recently when you went to Brazil involve any of that?
No, I didn't. Yeah. No, he doesn't do that.
Yeah, okay.
His name is João Teixeira. He lives in a little town that's north of Brasilia, a little town called Abajania. And I would say that... his healing comes more from Christian teachings, although he is not, it's not a religious thing when you go there. And he says that very, very clearly. This is, we're not espousing any particular religion. This is just all of them. He believes all of the religions are just a path to the same destination. But no, I don't think that it had any dramatic effect upon me, but it did allow me to, you know, more comfortably move into spiritual thinking, which I've always been inclined towards, but didn't really go there just out of kind of embarrassment.
You said something at the beginning that keeps puzzling me, because of all the things that you talked about, violent dreams when you were young, and I think about all the writing that you've done, and I'm just, my mind draws a blank to think about any songs that you dealt with that. And usually one of the impetuses for songwriters is to the stuff that's inside of you that's buried deep just starts coming out in that whole creative process. But that...
No, that doesn't come out in the songs.
No, it sure doesn't.
It's interesting. I talk about it sometimes.
But 60 years of writing music,
yeah.
I haven't heard.
No, it's not in there. Uh-huh. It's not in there.
Is that puzzling to you? It sure seems it to me.
Not really. The whole thing is, well, I shouldn't say not really. I guess, yes, it is. But more puzzling to me is why the violence dreams, especially starting at such a early age. So, I mean,
and did
you know, Western
that,
therapy thinking would be that, you know, there was some traumatic event that I covered up, but I really don't think so. I had a peaceful, happy childhood. I don't think so. But anyway, what any explanation that would help me would be something that I'd be very interested in. Although lately I've started to think like, well, I don't know what it is that I would do with an explanation.
Yeah, that was my next
What am question. I going to, you know, so what am I going to, this is the explanation. I would say, oh, okay.
Thanks. All through this record, I kept listening to the individual songs, and I don't do many TV references in my life because I don't watch much, but this one thing came to mind over and over again. It's Columbo saying, there's just one more thing bothering me. And, you know, it's like, so I wondered when I listened to, I'm sorry, that was a terrible Columbo, but I wonder if I play this song, if I play Love, I'm going to play the top verse, lyrics got changed, and I'm going to play Little Old, Little New, and you can just tell me what it was that you wanted different.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
We crave it so badly. Makes you want to laugh out loud when you receive it and gobble it like candy. We think it's easy, sometimes it's easy, but it's not easy. You're gonna break down and cry. We're not important, we should be grateful. And if you're wondering why
we create a new version.
Makes you wanna laugh out loud when you receive it and gobble it like candy. We think it's easy, sometimes it's easy, but it's not easy. You're gonna break down and cry. We're only here for a season of sunlight. And if you're wondering why
so for
I'm glad that that first version was the first version, because as I was listening to it, I said, oh man, that note's out of tune.
There's one more thing bothering me. So the for people who didn't catch it,
I think it's a better lyric, the second one. That's why I changed it.
The old one said, well, we're not important, we should be grateful, and if you're wondering why. And
right. That's okay. You know, that's true. That's true. But I don't know, there was something too simple about that. And we're only here for a season of sunlight. And if you're wondering why, if you're wondering, well, you know, what is our why are we here? What's our purpose? Then love. That's why we're here. We're here to love. So I think that's, I prefer that.
And if you think about all the answers to the questions of your dreams, or I think about people who can articulate like you can, living a life and wondering toward, you know, the latter half of your life, what it all means. We all want something profound in the end, in many ways, for there to be purpose. And in so many ways, this song sums it up for me. And I'm thinking that if in the end it was just love, I'm okay with that. Have you come to any sort of, or are you hoping to come to some sort of greater resolve about, with all the storytelling you've done and all the thinking and all the world you've seen and things that you've gotten to experiment, you know you are a fortunate soul. You appreciate it. You show your appreciation for being blessed so well in this world, you know, opportunity and all that.
I don't, you know, I'm not as troubled by that question as others are. I don't really think too much about why are we, you know, why are we here and what's our purpose. It seems to me the main thing that we're here for is to enjoy it. So if you're lucky enough to be in that part of the world where you can enjoy it, where, you know, you're not just having the life squeezed out of you by oppression. If you're lucky enough to be that, you should enjoy yourself. And I didn't make that decision with that kind of wisdom when I was 13, 14 years old and decided that I wanted to be a songwriter and a musician. But that's really what has been the case in my life. I've loved it. I really love it still. And I'm fortunate in that the thing that I loved also provided me with enormous success, which is much harder for musicians to attain in today's world than it was when I began to have success in the 60s. So I think enjoy yourself, you know, have fun, enjoy yourself, do good is your responsibility. And the rest of the questions, they're a mystery, but I find the mystery pleasurable. It doesn't bother me. I don't expect to know the answer to most of the mystery, and that's what gives me pleasure. It's not like I feel frustrated. We don't have the capacity to understand the great mysteries of life and God or no God or infinity, and we just can't get it. It's beyond us, but it's fine. We're not meant to get that, but the pursuit is so interesting that I think it's life-sustaining. And I think when you lose the interest in that pursuit, you're finished, and you let your body go, and or it's going anyway, and that's sufficient for me as far as answering that question. You know, I don't find the question to be torturing or anything like that.
Well, thanks for this. I know the line's going to get cut off in a minute, and I look forward to wherever you're creative endeavors take you. Perhaps you'll wind up sharing it with the world. Maybe not, but hope for joy for you and your loving family and wherever that leads.
Kind of you to say. Thank you.
You be well. Cheers.
Okay, bye.
I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.
If every human on the planet and all the buildings on it should disappear, would a zebra grazing in the African savanna care enough to shed one zebra tear? Questions for the angels. Questions for the angels.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Dignity Memorial. When your celebration of life is prepaid today, your family is protected tomorrow. Planning ahead is truly one of the best gifts you can give your family. For additional information, visit dignitymemorial.com. This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited 2x miles on every purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
A former president found guilty while running for re-election. For a story this big, one podcast is not enough. Here at NPR, we've got you covered from every angle. You can get the news as it happens and legal analysis on the podcast Trump's Trials. And for all the latest on what it means for the 2024 election, head on over to the NPR Politics podcast. Find Trump's Trials and the NPR Politics podcast wherever you get your podcasts.